Radio Pulpit, 657 AM, your daily companion.
Tune in. Grow in faith.
Champ Tunes with Inga Gore brings us to 13 minutes after 5 o'clock. Right ahead of that one was a heavy one for me, MC. But Father, we adore you. This is a late brother of mine and an admission. I've never done any broadcast with his songs, and I wasn't planning to do any actually, because it's just a bit of a heavy one for me. But I think for the first time ever, I didn't even break down while that song played. But anyway, I did promise you that I'd be having a chat this afternoon with the Dipty, but it's a bit of a funny one, I'll tell you, because I gave Pretty from Brahma Kumaris a call, and she says, no, it's fine, you can just call me Dipty. And I'm like, okay, is your name complicated? She's like, no. But anyway, Pretty, welcome, welcome. I always say welcome home, because this is home. Welcome.
Okay, thank you so much. My name is Pratibha, and I'm very happy to be with you on the show this afternoon.
Absolutely amazing. Now, in case you're wondering what we're talking about, we're talking Brahma Kumari, and it is a global spiritual university with centers in over 110 countries, including 11 in South Africa. They focus on reflection, self-transformation, and promoting peace and positive values. Now, listen, Pretty, we live in a very busy world. Why do you think rest has almost become a luxury rather than a right?
You know, I think it's where our values are today. If we look at it, we all think that if I want to be happy, I need to have more, I need to do more, I need to go for more places, etc. It's this whole mentality we have of not feeling enough and needing more and more and more. And it's coming from the idea that to feel fulfilled, something from the outside has to fulfill me. And that's why we end up on this rat race of always trying to chase after that elusive dream of happiness or love or whatever we call it. And it has made us become very externally focused in our lives. And that's why what gets compromised in that is our sense of rest and well-being often.
That's so true. Now, tell me, what role do thoughts, you know, worries and overthinking play in exhaustion?
Oh, absolutely a big role. You think about it, when you're worried, you feel exhausted after that, don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like your mind races and it goes all over the place. You're thinking up all different scenarios of that which hasn't happened at all. The understanding is very much to know that every thought of ours is like a packet of energy that we're using up. And a key understanding is that I feel because of the way I think.
Right.
Now, that's a big shift, because so often we think that I feel because of what is happening around me.
Exactly.
But actually, I feel because of the way I think about things happening around me. So that's where the shift comes. And so what tends to happen is that we tend to focus a lot into the future, you know, predicting, assuming, trying to risk manage, all of those kind of things. Or we tend to think a lot in the past and, you know, a bit of regret and, you know, hopefulness of if things could have changed and been different. So in both cases, what is happening is that we are using our energy, our thought, in a way that it's not allowing us to replenish ourselves. Whereas if we become more present and just be more centered in ourselves and begin to, you know, deal with things as they come in front of us and be more flowing with things rather than fighting with things, we will find that we will be less exhausted, because we're using our thoughts in a more fruitful and productive way rather than wasting it away in worry, in fear, in anxiety, imagination, those kind of things.
Okay. And how can a few minutes of inner stillness make a real difference?
Absolutely. You know, you think about it when you're going on a long trip, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how when you take a short break, just stretch your legs, breathe a little bit, have something to drink. It like revitalizes you, and then you can continue your journey further. The same principle applies in terms of our mind. Now, you just imagine our minds. Do we give it a break? It's constantly moving. Did you ever see your mind thinking nothing? Even when you're watching TV, it's like racing. Something is happening there. So when we create this habit of just, you know, breathing, centering, slowing down our thinking, what we're doing is we're like readjusting our inner compass.
Mm-hmm.
And that internal readjustment, in a way, then helps us just to feel more anchored.
Mm.
So that feeling of being anchored is what then helps us feel more refreshed. Because it's a bit like being on a ship out at sea and the waves are tossing and turning and we feel, you know, needing to move in many directions and deal with many things. But when we can feel anchored, that's when we feel our peace.
Mm. Sure. Now tell me, from a spiritual point of view, Priti, where does real renewal come from?
Two things in my own personal experience. One is I feel that many times we feel frustrated and stale, if I may put it like that, because we're not feeling ourselves growing in a meaningful way.
Yeah.
So I find that the first thing is to ask myself, who am I? What am I all about? What are my deeper inner values? What is it that really brings meaning to me? And I find that when I'm engaged in things that really give me meaning, it like unleashes unlimited energy.
Mm.
It's like I don't feel exhausted. It's like I feel motivated and an inner enthusiasm that keeps generating from within me. So it's this thing of connecting with my inner self, knowing what gives me meaning, and a deeper sense of purpose.
Mm.
And often we find that when we know we're doing something that makes a difference, that's when we feel that we find ourselves regenerating energy and renewing ourselves. So a sense of inner growth in a meaningful way,
mm-hmm.
and living purposefully. For me, those are the two key things at a very deep spiritual level that helps me to renew myself.
Very interesting. But tell me, Priti, how does silence or meditation help recharge inner energy?
Right. So for me, I've been practicing meditation for many years. And what I find is that it's like giving myself space to just go inward, reconnect with who I am, what I really am, reconnect with my energy inside. And in that process, what begins to happen is like I realign myself with what I am and where I'm all about. It's also about giving myself that space to just feel, to be at peace, and not needing to do or to be or to create or anything, but just to be at peace and enjoying that internal silence inside of me. So for me, that helps a lot because it slows down thinking. And it creates the internal clarity that I feel I need. Because I often find that after I've had meditation, I become more creative in the work that I need to do.
Mm.
So that clarity comes with that kind of silence. And I also, in the meditation that I use, and I think people can either use reflection or meditation or prayer, but it's also a way that when you're connecting with a higher source, you also begin to feel energized. Because ultimately, what is it that gives us strength? strength and power, the experience of pure love. Ultimately, that is what you know, ignites us in a way. So that's how I also see meditation helping and facilitating that kind of renewal inside.
Now tell me, how can people say no without feeling selfish or irresponsible?
I always use this analogy that what can an empty cup give? And so often we expect and people expect of us, but if we're not taking care of ourselves physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, what is it that we give? We give frustration, we give emptiness, we give our fears, we give anger. That's what we give.
Mm-hmm.
And so to really take care of myself and create that healthy boundary, and I need it to say, sorry, I need space for myself. It's actually not being selfish, but it's being selfless. Because when I do take care of myself in that right way, I'm able to give more of myself in a more unlimited way.
Mm.
I'm able to, you know, like, try listening to someone when you're tired. You can't, right?
Mm-hmm.
You just can't. It's just too much. But when you are well and you are healthy, you can offer you can listen with kindness, with understanding, with compassion. So our capacity to give depends on how well we take care of ourselves. So mm-hmm. it's really not being selfish, it's being selfless.
Okay. And can rest actually improve clarity, creativity, and compassion?
Absolutely. All three of that. And over and above that as well, I find that what it does is that it also helps me to hold a bigger vision. Because so often when we are exhausted, it's like it just becomes too much of energy, and we feel too much of a demand on us to actually respond from a wider perspective. But when I take rest in the right way, I can hold a bigger vision, and that bigger vision then helps me to respond appropriately and be able to, you know, you can like almost connect the dots better.
Mm.
And as a result of that, it's like you're able to tap into the wisdom that you do have in being able to respond to that situation. So definitely a level of calmness, a level of clarity internally, and being more anchored in what is meaningful helps us to then respond in a better way.
Okay. And what gentle message would you like to carry with them, that our listeners would carry with them today?
I think my main message is take care of yourself. You know, it's so important. I really feel the world we're living in now is very demanding of each one of us. There's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of fear out there. And we're the only ones that can take care of ourselves. And it doesn't take a lot, but it just means to create a priority for the self, which is important. And so when we learn to take care of ourselves, we become better people for our families.
Mm.
And we create healthier relationships and healthier families. And I think healthier families then create healthier communities. So we start making a difference in our sphere of influence when we take care of ourselves. And I think we owe it to ourselves, and we owe it to each other, and especially in times of crisis, we need each other, but we need the best of each other in order to deal with the kind of challenges we're facing.
Now, what are some of, you know, small practical ways that listeners can restore themselves during the day?
Yeah, so number one, I always tell people, be conscious of how you start your day. So always, before you get into the news or any of those kind of things, take time to just center yourself, do some deep breathing, meditate, a prayer, whatever you feel comfortable with, and feed yourself with something positive. because the way you start your day will influence the rest of your day. So take 10 minutes or 15 minutes before you enter your day, but enter it on your terms by taking care of how you want to prepare yourself for your day. And then the other thing that I find very important is during your day, take moments to take a break. Take a pause, breathe deeply, go outside for a walk, look at the birds or whatever, enjoy nature, whatever is around you. But it's like, get yourself out of that usual routine that we get so drawn into. And begin to become just a little bit more appreciative of your environment, because that in itself helps to create a positive mindset, which is very useful. And the final sort of practice, which I find very helpful, is really end your day with journaling or something like that, because it's nice to bring closure to your day with a positive note. So some people do a gratitude journal, or, I just try to say, okay, what's my takeaway for today? So something to bring closure in a positive way.
Okay. And since you're skilled in guiding moments of calm, would you lead us in a short 2-minute wellness reflection, helping us settle our minds, breathe deeply, and reconnect with a sense of balance?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So I invite you to just be relaxed, take in a deep breath, and slowly breathe out. Just be very mindful as you're breathing in. And as you breathe out, let your out-breath be longer than your in-breath. And do this at your own individual rhythm. And notice that as you're breathing in deeply, you're beginning to feel a greater sense of calm. Now I want you to just scan your body. Continue breathing deeply. Just scan your body so that you let go of any tightness and pressure that you may be feeling. Drop your shoulders. Let yourself sink into your chair. Rest your feet on the ground. Feel the ground supporting you. Feel the air on your skin. Just observe and enjoy that feeling of a growing sense of calm within you. And I want you to just gently turn your focus inwards. Moving your attention from away from what's happening around you and just settle in to the energy within you and rest your mind on one thought, and that is that at the core of my being is an energy of peace. I am an energy of peace. And so in this moment, I allow myself just to feel that stillness, that calm within, that peace. And notice how, as I rest my mind on that thought, that feeling of peace and calm begins to deepen and spread outward, so that from deep within I feel this calm growing and every cell of my body becomes calm, relaxed. And even the atmosphere around me becomes calmer and more peaceful. Enjoy this Enjoy the stillness. Enjoy this peace. Okay, thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, pretty. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, but that was really a great chat. We'll talk again next time. Thank you for that session.
My pleasure. Absolute pleasure. I don't know if anyone would like to know more. They can always contact us on our WhatsApp number of 066-495-1367.
That number again?
066-495-1367.
Pretty, thank you so much and have a lovely afternoon further.
Okay, thank you so much and you take care.
And that's about it from myself for today. Remember, Families of Virtue is coming up shortly. Until next time, God bless.
Greetings, everyone. This is Virtuous Roots, where we reclaim virtue to bring it to our home and yours. And I'm Thomas McCuddy.
And I'm Thomas Quackenbush.
I'm Nick Wiegand. And today's discussion is going to be loving your neighbor online. So it is.
I like that last part. Online.
Online. Well, it's probably, when it comes to social media, I'm more of a lurker than I am a talker. I don't post a whole lot. And I think the main reason is this, like, mm-hmm. I think we are absolutely, completely, 100% out of control with the way we treat each other online. Because most of the time, you just get punched in the mouth if you talk the way somebody's face that you talk online. I know this is a Christian program. We don't talk like that, but let's be honest.
There are places in the world where that would end up happening.
It would absolutely happen, right?
People would not tolerate it. Yeah.
So I do want to reference Mark 12:30-31. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind, and with all of your strength. The second is this: you shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is no other commandment greater than these. And so as we begin this, I don't even think we need to narrow it down to any particular type of post, but we use on this online arena as a way to vent and a way to say the things that we desperately want to say to people's faces, but we get big and bold behind a keyboard and a screen where nobody can see us.
Mm-hmm.
So some people just use it as a mechanism to get things out, but what's the real damage that is done when we treat each other poorly online?
You can't take the things. I mean, you can delete a post, but people could screenshot.
Well, you can't anymore because now it's all captured and backed up, and so you can think you deleted a post, but if you look in the deep dark recesses of the web, there are backups of those said posts.
I think it's one of those, like, for our listeners who aren't tech savvy, one thing I've always tried to communicate to teenagers, adults, everyone else: when it goes on the web, it's forever. It is forever. And so you've got,
there's a lot of politicians that are, it's happening right now, that they're realizing very quickly that something they deleted 10 years ago was backed up and is coming to light.
Well, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, like, people, there's things that appeared on websites, appeared out there that are being brought back up.
Yeah.
And there's an element, if you have one bad moment, like if I have a falling out with somebody, we exchange some words, later on we can forgive each other, but that was just between us. Mm-hmm. But when you've done that online, number one, it's for the world. They see that. And I think what it also does, the greatest damage is to ourselves, in the sense the habits we're creating.
Mm-hmm.
We are cultivating vices when we lean into those anger and malice. And to be clear, snark is not a spiritual gift. And there's a lot of snark. I'm not saying that about you specifically. I could, but I'm not saying about you specifically.
Not all the time. I don't do that. But I say that about my... At least I do it to people's faces.
Hey,
I'm joking.
This
is going to go south real quick.
Yes, it is. No, but there's this element, because since we've already established in other episodes, you and I have been raised in the same generation. There is that element of, you watch on the TV. I know we're laughing about this, but there's that element. We were taught through the sitcoms this biting humor, the snark, and to basically say what we want, say it creatively. Ooh, we, you know, we
say whatever really you want if you can make it funny.
Right, and, right. And it's in the sitcoms, all these things were always said for everyone else.
Yeah.
For the laugh track that's there. And I feel like social media, that for many of us, that's what it's become. It's for the funny, or look at me and look at what I did. But what you're, again, what you've done is you're just like when I was watching those sitcoms as a child and cultivating those habits because I'm watching this and I'm doing this. Now with social media, I have the chance to practice. Ooh. And there's no restriction. I can just rove around. And the temptation is very real because I'll experience this when I want to see what's going on with my friends. I want to look at like the news. I want to see what's happening there. And then I see somebody post something that's just absolutely either wrong or malicious or whatever it is. And I just get angry. And I look at this and I'm like, and I'll catch myself, you know, I'll start doing the keyboard warrior thing. And like, okay, I'm going to set this record straight. And I'm like, stop. Rule number one, do not post when you're angry. like some practical advice for families, practical advice. Cause again, kids are eventually going to get social media. I know this, my kids don't have social media right now, but they're going to have access one day. They're going to have this in their lives. And there's even jobs where you're supposed to, like there's professors, they have to get on the social media. They have to share things with the university. Like this is, sometimes it's a part of your job.
Well,
you need to learn how to do this well.
As a business owner, I'm supposed to do it. And sometimes I force myself and then I'll just drop off the face of the earth for 6 months because I just hate posting. But then I look around and there's the Mike Wingers of the world, or, you know, Red Pen Logic, or all of these amazing Christian creators, I guess is what we'll call them. I mean, I think that's the terminology, who engage with these difficult topics all the time, but they do it so well and so lovingly, and it's needed. It's necessary. Christians, it is needed for Christians to engage online.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is when you engage as a Christian the first time, you're now a Christian in everybody's eyes. I know we are anyway, but when we then step out and aren't loving our neighbor, now it's just a Christian acting out, not Thomas doing some, you know, it's captured and now we're under a microscope with whatever we say.
Yeah. And the reality is it's like you said, we need it. We need a good presence, but that's why we need that love. Are we posting because this is an act of love and something that, and you're doing it in a loving way, not that just, okay, this needs to be said, but I think that's what guides me. Like if I can't immediately connect, like I start shutting stuff down, start getting off. And
I want to make sure we're clear. Doing something in a loving way is the Christian definition of love, not the culture definition of love. Doing something in a loving way is truth said in, you know, with the spirit in mind. It's not pulling back. It's not affirming everything that everybody always thinks and says. Like, let's just make sure, like, it's said in a loving way, but like the way Christ said things in a loving way.
Mm-hmm.
Straightforward.
Yeah.
And not in the condescension. And we also think about, you know, kind of look at the other side of this. Because of the nature of social media, it's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. We have it in our phones. Like at one time, we were able to, like, if we do have issues with somebody else, that can remain at school, or that can remain at, you know, at least you can go home and have your peace. Now it's like always around. And, you know, if you're engaging in these types of things and you're around these toxic type people, you can't get away. Mm-hmm. And I find that like you're just thinking about as you're pressing enter and you're about to post something, like what kind of effect does that have on another human being? Because I think with the digital like interface between us, it's almost like we're not engaging in human beings. It's just we're able to kind of abstract them, and they're just this kind of this internet like blog or whatever. They're just somebody with an idea or something. But because like you said earlier, we rarely would ever say anything that we would say online to criticize somebody to their face.
Right.
And I think about it even too, like we're always
without paying a price.
Yeah. And a lot of times you wouldn't do it because you just, you know, you don't want, you, like, generally don't want to hurt their feelings.
And you're scared.
Yeah, I could be scared too.
I mean, let's just be honest. Like, most of the time we don't do it because we are afraid of you know, what that consequence might be.
It's one of those things that's funny too, even just when we put ourselves in a different environment, the kind of a artificial environment, like say you're driving your car, there's stuff like, you know, somebody cuts you off and like, or something happens or somebody, you know, you want like, you're wishing the world like, you know, to end for that person because you're so angry.
Some people.
Yeah.
No, that's not a normal thing. Just so we're clear. Road rage is not a normal thing. But no. It's crazy. Most people don't act that way, but like some people do road rage. And yeah. But if you road rage to their face, again, you'd get knocked out.
Yeah, because if we have this armor of this car that we can, but this.
A lot of people can relate with being upset with another driver.
Well, I just like the way he said it. He's like, you're wishing the world, their world. No, not everyone does that.
Sometimes we can have.
Some people are mature.
I'm not defending road rage, but I'm saying there is that element that there are going to be those times where I don't consider myself as one who has road rage, but I can be pretty angry at times.
I'm going to have a sub caveat is love your neighbor even when you're in your car.
Yep.
Okay.
But
we're going to add to this.
But that's because if we practice hatred in one arena of our life, it is going to spill into those other areas.
Sure.
And that's why this talk, for some people, they're like, you know, well, that's just online. And part of what we try to teach with virtue is, and this goes all the way back to the ancients, there was a concept they call the unity of the virtues, that to have one virtue is to have them all, because you can't separate them. They're not silos. It's not the case that I have a prudence over here, and I have a fortitude over here, and I have my temperance over here.
Justice. Well, you can have those three, but no justice.
Well, again, to name them all,
No, that's not my point, is they're not silos. You're saying that come together. It's not like you can have three of them, and then justice, there's just none of them.
Right, because if you're going
to... I was on board with what you were saying.
Because you're going to ask, if you're going to do something, and you're going to say... Because I think it was even Aquinas pointed out, he's like, you, if all things being equal, and you have two people, and they have all the virtues, except this one just lacks justice.
Mm-hmm.
He says, in what way can you say this person is prudent? Because he's not doing the right thing the right way.
Right.
How can you say that they have courage when they're not standing for what is right? So if to grow in one virtue is, in a sense, they have to work together. And if you're going to fall away, if you're going to develop a vice, it's going to pull all of them down.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is why this, what we do online, how we respond online, is going to, I think, for what happens realistically, is it's cultivating more vices than it is virtue. And that behavior online can't really be separated. And even in my own life, I've met people who online were just nasty. And then I meet them in person, and I've got one in mind in particular. I finally met this person. I knew them through others, saw it online. And so I go in person, and I was kind of worried. And they're like the nicest person in person. But online, it's terrible. And I'm like, and this is a believer. And this is like, wow, this is bad.
Well, yeah.
This is not good. And so this is why to be, for those that are online and those who are on social media, and this is not an age-restricted thing, that there's plenty of grandparents
who
are on.
It is not an age-restricted thing.
There are plenty of grandparents who are on. And there's plenty of like teenagers who are like, yeah, I don't touch this stuff. I stay away. I'm not even bothered with it. So, but the reality is, based upon the numbers, there's a lot of people who are on social media of some form. And we are not, we've never really been taught how to handle this. We've never been given and apply our virtues to this keyboard that sits in front of us. We don't look at the keyboard and the screen and the profile pic the same way we do when we're looking at somebody eye to eye. And that's why, if we're not loving somebody online, when we're online, we're not loving people. It's not a lesser thing. It's like, well, you know, it was just a Facebook post. No, it's not. It was some vice that's come out, or you're tapping into your vices in a brand new way, ways that you could never actually do, because it goes back to, you know, you don't just stand in a crowd and yell out necessarily what's on your mind. You can do that on social media. You can go on there and you don't even have to like make a big effort. You can just like pull out your phone and just start going at things. And people do this, and you're cultivating within your own heart the wrong kind of reaction. You're cultivating these vices, and you're going to say you love people, but you have to love them even when you can't see their faces, even when it's just the screen.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things you just kind of brought up is I know you're a big journaler. Right? Mm-hmm. You love to journal. Thomas Quackenbush, do you journal?
Not so much.
I do it on and off. But I know that when I'm journaling and I do it to work through ideas and work through feelings and work through things, it helps me really kind of cement my ideas into place and then helps me with my arguments, helps me with, you know, emotional stuff. Like, I think journaling's key. I think when you look across the board, I think it helps men and women with all kinds of aspects of their life. I think most of the people that we're talking about are trying to use these Facebook posts almost as if they're trying to journal. They don't think these things through, but they're trying to work through these intense, complex emotions by just spewing out of the mouth whatever they're feeling in that moment.
Yeah. Microblogging.
Microblogging, yeah.
I think that's the term.
And yeah, but I think that's what these posts become.
Mm-hmm.
Is they're just like, they have this feeling that they haven't thought through, and then instead of sitting on it and thinking about it and chewing on it and actually mm-hmm. showing some maturity with it, they just spew it.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's worth pointing out, because I have seen people, and I've done this myself, where I'm toying with an idea and I specifically go to the masses for the purpose of, hey, what's been your experience? What's your opinion on this?
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm also one of those who, and it's easy for us to just say social media is evil. I have seen the value. I can have plenty of good stories with connections, things that have happened.
So I want to make sure. I don't think I don't even like social media, but I'm not saying it's evil.
Right.
You know, I think in today's environment, unfortunately, I think there's a need for it.
Mm-hmm. And it's a tool, and like all tools, we can use it well. Mm-hmm. We can use it badly, but I think it's the kind of tool that lends itself to tapping into our vices. It draws us into that. The terms now, like this afternoon, my wife was listening to a podcast, or she was doing something with one of her like groups that she's in with homeschool, and they were just discussing like how to identify if you're doom scrolling. And even that term, that idea that we develop these habits such that we just automatically pull it out and we start scrolling. And it was this weekend we learned that there's a thing called the scroll thumb,
mm-hmm.
that you can actually get carpal tunnel. Like, they have people now who are getting carpal tunnel in their thumbs because of their scrolling habits, mm-hmm. like with their phone. So that is a clear indication we've not been taught how to use the tool correctly. We're overindulging.
Well, I mean, I think it's important to keep in mind that it's literally designed to not be used correctly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these big tech is what we're talking about. And mm-hmm. I know we talk about people, like, there's conspiracies that surround it, but the intention behind the tool is not maybe the original idea, but the way it is designed is not to be used correctly. The way it is designed is to make you doom scroll. The way it is designed is to keep you on it as long as it can. You can to make as much money as they can.
They want
to
make money, ads, and all the other things
are
there.
Everything about it is so, I mean, down to the pixel, is so intricately designed to make you use it poorly.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, it's a tool, but I mean, it's a tool in the sense that we have to, I mean, there's a diligence that has to come with being able to use it in a way that is positive and not just kind of, you know, indulge the vices, I think is how you said it. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, not just indulge the vice, because every pixel on that screen is to get you to indulge the vice.
Mm-hmm.
Every pixel on that screen is to get you to throw temperance out the window,
mm-hmm.
and spend as much time there as possible. Mm-hmm. The algorithms themselves are designed for the echo chamber to let you hear the things that you engage with and that you want to hear, and that people that agree with you, and the things that get you riled up and that get you to click. Like, yes, it's a tool, but we have to keep in mind how deadly this tool can be. And it's not a deadly for other people. It's more like a suicide. Like, it's designed mm-hmm. to capture us.
And even if you, as you're scrolling, even if you just stop on something long enough, you don't even have to click it.
Right.
The algorithm is already picking up that it's caught your attention.
Yep.
So loving your neighbor, loving yourself? Maybe we can even apply it that way. Do you love yourself as you get online? Because if you indulge, if you go in these habits, you're actually being destructive to yourself.
Sure, yeah.
So it's not just even what you're actively engaging. It's what you're doing with yourself, which there's, in a weird way, I don't know. It's a way we don't think about it. If you're going to love others, there's a sense that if you don't love yourself, you're not going to love others. That you're loving others through loving yourself. Because if you take care of yourself and you're developing these vices, or you're developing the virtues, sorry, to be clear. If you're developing these virtues, then you're becoming the kind of person who is going to live well among others.
Yeah, the way you're saying it, though, this could be one of those. This is such a delicate topic to mm-hmm. talk about. This idea of loving yourself is so delicate because it can be so self-indulgent very quickly.
It can.
So, it's got to be, there's got to be some caution when we talk about that, using that terminology.
Right. So, to focus it in with the other people, I think this is why, again, everything you've said, it is designed in a way like a trap, but it is a tool. And again, it's also the kind of tool where, whether you're a business owner or like in ministry, I mean, it's crucial. You've got to have some sort of presence. This is how people find you.
You have to.
There's been people with Thomas and I, actually, there was a lady down in Tasmania we got connected with who, through the social media, found us. We began ministering to her. She was in her 60s. She was a New Age guru that had come to Christ.
Oh, cool.
And again, on the island of Tasmania, where is she going to go? She had very limited options. And because of connections, she found us. Mm-hmm. So, and that was a while ago. So this is examples, to be clear. It is a mixed bag. It's a treacherous terrain, but it's one that, with the guidance and prudence, self-control, these kinds of virtues, we can navigate it. And at the same time, as we deal with people, just like as people will be people-y and cause us to not like what they say, and they will show various bad qualities. We don't have to be like that. And if we're the kind of people that can transverse this terrain and engage with them properly, that makes us the kind of people, you're going to not only do this online, you're going to do this in all your relationships. You're going to be that kind of person who people can look at and know that when you speak, and I think this is what's also important, that when we offer the correctives, and you're the kind of person that people know you correct with that sense of virtue, mm-hmm. they tend to listen more.
They do.
Because if you're just the person who's like, it's almost like when you're the parent that's always yelling, your kids stop listening. They stop hearing, you know. But there's this element when you're the parent that stops and like all of a sudden, like the kids know that there's a shift and they know, oh, we need to listen. To be that kind of person, I think that is, we don't want social media to ruin us. And I think that's just the call. I think it's just some wisdom. And I think people need to step back. And I've done this. I have to do this for myself. Step back. What am I saying? What am I doing? How am I presenting myself? And going back to just what you read, am I doing this because I love people, or am I doing this just to indulge my mm-hmm. own anger or my own, you know, does this just make me feel good?
Yeah,
and that's why I've got to.
Yeah.
I mean, this is our commandment, is to love our neighbor, mm-hmm. right? Like, so we have to do it well. I think it's also important to realize that if we as adults, you know, 45 years old, and I have to ensure that I set up my boundaries so that I don't overindulge in Facebook or whatever. If as a 45-year-old man, I have to set up my own boundaries, I think we really have to be cognizant of setting those boundaries for our children too, mm-hmm. because they're way more impulsive, or they should be more impulsive than the parents. Like our parents, we should have some self-control, but they're way more impulsive and they're far less mature as to be able to handle these things and understand right place, right time, wrong place, wrong time.
Mm-hmm.
So my last question is, what is, in, you know, 30 seconds, if we use it well, what can we accomplish?
Well, I think we can, you know, lovingly correct false information.
Okay. So we can correct bad ideas, false information. I like that. If we do it in the right way.
Mm-hmm. And on the other side, just promoting the good ideas to be the kind of place where when they've gone to like our site, our page, whatever it is, oh, I didn't know that. They've learned something good, or we've shared a resource, the kind of thing that somebody shared with me. And I was like, that, I needed that. That was exactly what I was looking for, to be a blessing to other people.
To be an encouragement.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. To be an encouragement, to have a voice which is positive, which is very rare out there, especially positive for Christ. I think people are starting to see a lot of Christians as just completely naysayers, and it's not really what it, I mean, truth needs to be told. But when we couple that with, you know, the positive message of the gospel, I mean, we can affect many lives as Christians online, as long as we're careful. Well, gentlemen, appreciate the conversation as always. You can find us at familiesofvirtue.com. Our podcast, Virtuous Roots, can be found on all major streaming platforms. Be blessed, and we will talk to you next
time. At Radio Pulpit, we are dedicated to delivering content that inspires and uplifts, guided by faith and truth. Our commitment is to provide quality programming for our community. We are here to serve with content that speaks to the heart, sharing messages of hope and love every day. If you believe we haven't followed the broadcasting code, you can contact the Broadcasting Complaints Commission of South Africa. Visit www.bccsa.co.za or call 011-326-3130 for more information. Thank you for listening to Radio Pulpit, your trusted voice in faith and community.
Do you need prayer? Radio Pulpit, in collaboration with Need Pray, is ready to stand in prayer with you. Contact us today with your prayer request at 012-334-1222 or WhatsApp us on 067-429-7564. You can also visit us on radiopulpit.co.za for your online prayer request. We will faithfully pray with you.
Radio Pulpit 657 AM.
You and 657 AM and life. A winning team on the road to eternity.